All right, we're gonna get going tonight for the Cache Valley Transit District Board Meeting, May 22nd, 2024. We are going to start with a Pledge of Allegiance led by Glenn.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
For all these people.
Okay, thank you. The agenda is before you, and we need to modify the agenda, so before we approve it, we are going to remove item 5D, the presentation by Jeff Gilbert from the MPO. I would accept a motion to approve the modified consent agenda.
I move to approve the modified consent.
Sean, and a second? And Lear has a second, thank you. Okay. We're at item number four. Oh, I'm sorry, forgive me. All in favor of the modified consent agenda, please say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Say nay. Not hearing any of that carries, thank you. Any public comment tonight? No, okay. No public comment. We'll continue on to item number five, board business, and a presentation of the audit fiscal year 2023 by Glenn Schmidt, our chair of the audit committee.
So it looks like we have our financial report. We had a committee meeting with the auditors, with Matt, and really appreciate all the work that he and his staff have done, reporting nothing unusual, which is what we like. It's what we call a clean audit, and everything is in order as far as what they've audited, and no material defects or anything aspects. I will turn the time over to Curtis and Matt to kind of go through things.
Okay. So we're excited to be able to present this. If you remember, in March, we came to the board and presented the year-end information in an unaudited format. The bound copy that we handed out, that's the actual final financial statements that we're presenting tonight. And so I'm not going to go any more into the numbers unless somebody has questions about something. Electronically, you also should have received a letter that's called the governance letter. And Matt is going to go over what they did and present, and we'll answer any questions.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
I should say Matt is the audit partner that runs the audit with Squire and Company.
Squire and Company?
It's Squire and Company.
Yep.
That the board has hired in past years.
Trey does all the work, so you can look at him. I take all the glory. but appreciate you having me here just for a couple minutes. As Glenn mentioned, we previously met with the audit committee and went over some details, and I'll just highlight those. Ultimately, we've been engaged to perform three audits. The first audit is an audit of the financial statements. So Curtis and Todd and their teams account for the balances and activities of the district throughout the year, prepare a financial statement, and we audit that financial statement. And issue an opinion, and that opinion is that the financial statements present fairly in all material respects the financial positions of the district, which ultimately means as you utilize the financial statements, you can reasonably rely on the information there to make decisions. The second audit we perform is an audit in accordance with uniform guidance, or sometimes known as the Single Audit Act, which is an audit of federal awards. So you receive some federal funding, some significant federal funding, and as a result of that federal funding, you're required to go through an audit of federal compliance. So we select your major federal awards that you receive and audit the compliance related to those federal awards and issue an opinion that the district complied in all material respects with the compliance requirements outlined related to those federal awards that we audited. The final audit that we're engaged to perform is an audit in accordance with state compliance audit guide. So because you're a government, the state auditor's office issues a compliance audit guide that outlines some specific compliance requirements of the state laws. We obviously don't audit every law that you have to comply with. The state auditor outlines the specific ones that we're required to look at. As an example, budgetary compliance, fund balance. What are the other ones? There's a fraud risk assessment, Open and Public Meetings Act, and issue an opinion on compliance related to those compliance requirements. Those compliance requirements that we're required to look at rotate each year, so it kind of depends on the year what the state auditor has us focus on. But we issue an opinion that the district complied in all material respects with the compliance requirements outlined in the audit guide issued by the Office of the Utah State Auditor. So as Glenn mentioned, a relatively clean report. There were no material weaknesses or significant deficiencies that we identified. This governance letter that Curtis talked about, ultimately there's some required communications. If we had come across challenges in the audit, if management had made it difficult for us to gather information, we'd be required to communicate that to you in that letter. There are no items in that letter that you should be concerned about. Any questions on anything there?
Matt, can I ask a question? So you mentioned something about the state auditor and items that they ask you to give attention to. Can you give more detail on that?
Yeah. So I'll just highlight what those are.
Please.
Specifically. Yep. And again, some of those we have to look at every single year. What page is that, Curtis?
It's page 35 in the bound audit.
So on page 35 it outlines them, but I can highlight.
Yeah, please.
So some of those we have to do every year. Some are on a three-year rotating basis. It's subject to the auditor changing. They issue the guide every year anyway. So the first one is budgetary compliance. And so you, as a board, adopt a budget and may amend that budget as necessary. Our requirement is to ensure that you've given proper budgetary notice of those budget, give proper public hearing, and then ultimately, if you were within budget, if you didn't give public notice or weren't within budget, then we would have a compliance item. But we did not. Restricted taxes and related restricted revenue. So you get some sales taxes, a lot of sales taxes. We have to ensure that you utilize those sales taxes for their intended purpose. Now, some government entities, there's a little bit more testing as it relates. Your taxes are for transportation. The entire entity is designed for transportation. So that testing is ultimately a selecting a sample of transactions, ensure that you use those for the intended restricted purpose revenue, which is transportation. Fraud risk assessment. Annually, I believe, Curtis, you probably do this for the entity, but there's a fraud risk assessment tool that the state auditor's office has prepared. And it's basically a questionnaire that you go through. Do you have a CPA on staff? Do you have a functioning audit committee? Do you have segregation of duties? And the state auditor has issued points associated with each one of those questions. So Curtis is required to fill that out. It's presented in a board, probably through a consent agenda item, but I don't know.
Just presented.
It's presented to the board and ultimately filed with the Office of the Utah State Auditor. So we have to ensure that it was done and filed on a timely manner. And that's done once a year. Public treasurer's bond, because you're a government entity, there's a treasurer's bond, or your insurance policy has to protect public resources from theft or dishonesty, from Curtis, from Todd, from the board, misappropriation of funds. So ensure that you're properly bonded or have the proper insurance coverage to protect the entity from that. And then Open and Public Meetings Act, making sure that you're posting agendas within the required notice, that those agendas are sufficiently detailed, that the public would know what you're going to take actions on, so if there was public comment, they would have the opportunity to come and provide that public comment. So those were the items this year. Did that help?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Other questions? Okay. Thank you. We really do appreciate Todd, Curtis, Mindy, their entire teams. I think I mentioned this to the audit committee. This is one of those audits that we really look forward to coming to. Because we know as we ask questions, the information's there, it's there timely, it's there quickly, they don't have to scramble, they know where it's at, they reconcile things. It's really a testament to the board and the commitment that you have to quality, and and to Todd and Chris and their entire team. So we appreciate it.
Thanks, Matt. We appreciate you guys coming up and giving the presentation live. That's great. And good job, administration, for a clean audit. That's fantastic news for us. We're going to go over the first quarter financials for fiscal year 2024. Curtis, would you lead us through that?
I am. Let's go ahead and bring those up. They're handed out. We went through the first quarter results. Obviously, these are very preliminary results. It's 3 months into the year. We're looking for any trends that might start to show themselves, anything that could just look like a warning sign. So if you go down to the explanations page, Brad, we'll start here. You'll notice for one of the first times, salaries and benefits isn't one of our lead items. We're actually trending in good territory with that. We think we're on top. But one of the things that popped up was supplies. We're running a little bit low, and a lot of this relates to the fact that we're going to be doing the rollout of the rebranding from CBTD to Connect, and that's going to happen in the second and third quarter, so a lot of that's going to happen. This expense will come up in the next two quarters and be mostly spent by the third quarter, most likely. Fuel, we took our best shot. Fortunately, we're on the right side, so it's running a little bit lower than what we projected. It's still hovering. I just saw the fuel bill today. It's hovering right around 280, so it's a little bit lower. So we're actually having some variances there right now. We'll take those. They're not going the wrong direction. That's the nice part. Tires, like we've explained in prior years, we try to time the purchasing of tires more towards the fall and early winter, so that they're going into that season with brand new tread. So we'll see that one pick up more in the third quarter is when we expect more of that budget to be spent. Utilities, it always runs a little bit high in the first quarter. This is an out of line. We've seen that our projections for where, especially if you remember last year, natural gas really caught us by surprise. The price basically doubled. We've got our projections more in line. So we're feeling pretty confident about where that's going to come out, but it is running a little bit higher than one would expect, but by a little bit. Equipment purchases, so much of the equipment is planned right before we move in, so a lot of this is furniture and equipment that'll be put to and installed into the new facility as we move out there, and so the vast majority of that budget's going to be spent more towards the fourth quarter. So it's not unexpected that it's running where it's at. It's just we wanted to tell you why. And then, of course, we're on track for completion of the project. The latest date that our construction team gave is early January 2025. And then it'll take us a couple of months to get people trained to actually be able to move over into there. We've got a transition plan that started, so we're lining that up. We're in the very first phases of that. We've got a lot more, but we've got a rough schedule, and anticipated target move-in date for us is right around the end of March if everything works out right. So, but ribbon cutting will probably be the first part of next year is what we're anticipating. On the revenue side, so keep going down, Brad. Sales tax, it's really too early to see any trends, but we're not noticing a deviation that would cause us concerns. Interest rates have stayed higher for longer. You've probably heard that term from the feds, and so we're benefiting from that right now. Our federal grants, they're coming in about where we expect them to. Our construction's just a little bit on the slower side, but that'll pick up as we get going.
Can I ask a quick ignorant question?
Please.
What are we interest on the fund balance?
Our cash balances that we have.
Oh, even half, okay, so not just the fund, but the cash
balances. It's any of our cash balances. So if you happen to look in your financial statement, I think it's about page 8 or so on this one. I'll just double check real quick. It's a little bit past 8. Let me take that back. 9. I was off the page. You can see our cash balances at the end of the year were about $12 million. So we keep that invested. It earns roughly that 5.3% right now is about where it's at. And so right now we're not drawn on that cash. We're drawing down on it periodically, but it's to do the match on the construction. And so the cash balance will go down and our interest earnings will go down through the year. But right now the interest rate's solid. So that's a great question. So we added in a pretty long explanation on the other account. It's relatively small. We typically don't like it to be large. The vast majority of what ends up in this account is when other people hit us and we have to recognize insurance proceeds as a revenue. We're not allowed to just offset the expense. And so there's a revenue that comes in from the insurance company to pay for the accident costs, and we'll have a corresponding expense down in preventative maintenance for the parts and repairs that we do. That's designed to equal out. In the vast majority of cases, it equals out exactly. So we collect our insurance company actually pays us, goes after the other insurance company, and settles everything up, and we get made whole. So, and I'll just tell you, just these last couple weeks, since the audit committee brought it up, I say that very much in jest, we actually got hit twice. And the one's funny, our bus is driving along and the guy makes a left-hand turn out and just doesn't, he's trying to turn into the middle area, and he swipes into our lane and he literally just crashes into the side of the bus.
Those buses are hard to see. So.
And, yeah, obviously we had some disguise on it. But it's those types of things. We got the repair estimate in, it's almost $4,000 for the panel that he hit. So it's not cheap. So we'll end up recognizing almost $4,000 worth of revenue, and we'll have a corresponding repair expense of approximately $4,000, and it nets itself out.
Do we have a large deductible?
Our deductible is $500, and when they hit us, we get it back.
Well, when they hit us?
Yeah. If we hit somebody else, no, it's just a $500 deductible. We've kept it fairly low.
Can we put it up higher to get a lower premium?
It doesn't adjust the premium that much. No. With what we're insuring, we've looked at it. It doesn't really. The amount of premium savings that we get versus the amount of what we would be paying out, possibly, it's not that big of a difference. We've kept it lower. We do look at that though. It's a valid question.
So when you said you get exactly the amount that will cost to repair it, are you allowed to get extra, or that's not the case?
No, we're not. We can only recover what was lost. We can't recover in excess of what our loss is. So we have to document everything of what our loss is. Occasionally, the other insurance company will fight back and say, hey, we don't think it's worth that much, and the insurance companies get into it. We have had times where insurance companies settled for a little bit less, but we still get made whole because our insurance company pays us what they promised. So we're continuously made whole because we filed through our insurance first. So we get what we what the costs were for the fixing the bus.
Any other questions, discussion? No? I hear any. Thanks, Curtis.
Thank you.
Thanks. All right, well, let's move on to 5C. We're going to do a consideration of changes to Route 6, 7, 8, and 9. Todd, would you walk us through that?
You bet. We're going to pull up a presentation for you. All right. I turned it on, Brad. I turned it on. Let me try
check.
Again.
Spell check not working.
All right, I didn't turn it on. I don't know. I got pointed just right. Okay, so just real quickly, we Wanted to go back through the purpose that we kind of approached the board with this route realignment, increased safety, improving our reliability for connections at the transit center, increased access as we've had new development areas, and then continuing to maintain that 3-block standard for walking within the urban core area. Just real quickly going through the timeline of the process. So again, we're constantly gathering feedback from drivers, from our employees, from the public. And so this is you know, feedback for a period of time that we've received this. And then we're also looking at, as development occurs, roadways, development of other things, housing, things of that nature. So we presented this back to the board originally in February. We shared with you the preferred alternatives. We've looked at various alternatives prior to that, but came to you with the preferred ones. We opened a public comment period April 1st through April 30th. We're presented the initial results partway through the month, and now we're going to present the final results. And then we're going to present you our final recommendation. So this is Route 6. So again, we had 162 respondents with regards to Route 6. You can see that 85% of those respondents were either neutral or positive, with 15% of them being negative. However, in all of these routes, many of the negative... What?
The presentation isn't advancing for me. It's just showing the first slide.
No, it's showing on this.
Do you want to try to stop sharing it, resharing it, Brad?
There you go. I get it now.
You got it? Okay.
Yep.
Let us know if it changes. So even with the negative comments, there were several comments within all of these routes that were more just people not understanding. We can reach out and explain some of that. But so given this, I'll wait till the very end on what we're proposing. But okay, now I can't advance. You advance for me, Brad. I'm not going to worry about this. So Route 7, again, we see that we had 94% positive or neutral, 6% negative, 162 comments. So similar to Route 8 as far as the total number of comments. Again, folks like the fact that this is going to the zoo now, servicing that area. That's been a request we've had for several years. Next slide. And stop me if you have questions. Route 8, 157 respondents, 89% positive or neutral, 11% negative. Again, most folks appreciated the changes. This shortens the route, makes it more reliable to get back to the transit center. And next one. Route 9, 87%? Positive or neutral, 13% negative on this. And again, you can look at this, not much change in the existing and proposed. We had been doing the proposed, we've been doing a detour for some months because of construction. And so we were doing the proposed route on that detour, and we heard positive comments through that detour, which is why we came back and said, hey, maybe let's propose this. However, one of the things that was pointed out to us through this public comment period with Mayor Daines, is on 1800 North and what is that, Jody? Is that Second West? Second West. Just north of 1800 North, I think at about 2000 or 2200 North, they're going to build a mental health kind of intake mm-hmm. center for kind of ER type visits for mental health. And so that was good information to have. We'll talk about that when we get to our recommendations.
So before we advance, can I ask a question?
Sure.
So it appears we have 10 comments on this one in the negative. We had 11 on the previous one. I thought 9 on the one before that. Are there any, and I assume the answer is no, but are there any material mentions in there that we should consider as part of this?
I think the biggest one that has some validity to it, and again, anytime you make a change, you're going to do this, someone that had a stop within maybe a block of them now mm-hmm. is going to have to walk 3 blocks, maybe.
Is that basically it?
Yeah, and so that is the one thing that folks are going to... There is a little bit of schedule adjustment, but it's fairly minor, really, in times. But those are really the big comments. Am I misstating anything there, Jody? That's kind of what my analysis is as I've read through them. And so, again, making a change, we're going to impact somebody. That's going to happen.
Yeah.
Good question. Thank you.
On this one, it seems the new left turn onto 1800 North, is that not? I mean, the existing is a four-way stop, which probably slows you down.
I don't believe the existing is a four-way
it's
stop.
It's a two-way stop, going north-south.
Yeah.
So it slows you down. But now you have to make a left turn on there. So either way, it's not changing that. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah,
there's
from a safety's perspective, there's really not a lot of change. Even from a time perspective, you had one more turn in there at that, you know. So, good question.
I have one comment.
Please.
There's a little bit of concern and a little bit of confusion because changing some of the routes will change the outbound and inbound side, so it might drive somebody crossing the street another time. Or children crossing the street, say, because they've had a stop on their side of the street, and now they'll have to go to the intersection and cross the street. I think that.
If you go back to Route 6, I think that's what you're referring to, right, Jody? Like Route 6.
6 is a good example.
Go one more, Brad. Change, yeah. Route 6, you can see where on the existing it's just one line, so there's a stop on either side of the road, where now there's a little bit of a loop, and so people may have to cross the street.
But the offset, we believe, to that is we then stop on the same side of the street at Woodruff Elementary, so it's on the Woodruff side of the street.
Which that elementary is a big destination, and elementary kids are not having to cross the road. So
what is the cost impact on these changes? Do we have that dollarized yet?
We haven't. I mean, really, it's changing the stop locations. I mean, so it's labor for changing stop locations. As
We're
far as
moving shelters or anything like that, are we?
Okay. I don't think any shelters are moving.
There are some stop moves and a little bit of...
So it's a sign, basically, that's it.
Infrastructure. Well, we'll have a bridge between the sidewalk and the curb in a few locations for accessibility.
But this is pretty minor. I mean, as far as regular operations, the hours are the same and mileage is similar.
And 6 and 8 have both been kind of chronically late, right?
Correct.
So that friends ride those.
Yeah. They are challenges.
When are the changes of the Connect signs?
August 5th.
So are you going to coordinate that with this?
We'll talk about that here in one second. That's a great question.
Good question.
Okay, let's go back, Brad, to where let's go to the next one. So, again, so what we're looking at is we want to implement the preferred alternatives for 6, 7, and 8. Given the fact of the mental health center going in, in the next little while, and really, it's kind of a wash on comments as far as whether we should make the change or not. We feel like let's just keep it as it is with Route 9. And so we think that's probably the better approach. And so that's what our recommendation to you is going to be, or is. We're looking at if the board approved this at tonight's meeting, the implementation would take effect August 5th. And to your question, Mike, that's when we're planning on releasing the rebrand, and so this is all coordinated with that. And then once, if the board takes action tonight, then we will start a public outreach and education campaign with these changes. So we have some elementary schools, cash employment training. There's some destinations where, again, we think we can help with some of the confusion that folks had even through the survey by giving them more information and really doing some public outreach. And then, as was requested by the board, after the changes take effect, we would open a public survey process again, give us feedback. Again, we always have a public input process that people communicate with us. We regularly are involved in that. But given this, these are some significant changes, we definitely are fine doing that survey. And then we can come back and report to the board those survey results.
Are you deferring Route 9 until that facility is built, or...?
No, our recommendation after going through this is it really was kind of sixes. People that said, hey, let's make the change, and people said, no, leave it as it is. And so really with that and the fact that that's going to go in, we're like, it doesn't really make a significant impact. So we're saying let's just leave it as it is. So that's our recommendation to y'all. Any other questions?
Okay, I think on the heels of that, we're seeking a motion for for alteration, the administration's recommendation of modifying Route 6, 7, and 8 as recommended. So I'd accept a motion. Sean's moving. A second, please. Glenn's seconded. Any discussion before we make a decision here? Okay. All in favor of that, please say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Okay, the motion carries. Thank you. We're going to skip 5D. We're going to go to 6A. Todd, will you take us through that?
So I just wanted to confirm right now for the facility tours. We're going to do a facility tour tomorrow and then one on Friday. And so, again, I'm going to tell you what we have you signed up for. If you want to change, we can change that. I just want to know so that we can have things ready. But so we have Floor and Mike for...
change me to Friday.
Okay. For Friday. Okay. So we have Floor on Thursday.
Schedule a tour.
No, then let's do it on Friday.
So then we have everybody on Friday.
Yeah.
All right.
It's 10...
We're not actually doing a meeting. You're not conducting any business. I mean, we're not doing anything other than walking you around. So what I would say is Friday at 10 o'clock at the trailer there on the northeast corner of the property. Again, remember, just wear closed-toe shoes. You don't need to wear anything other than just closed-toe shoes.
Well, clothing. We're clothes.
Clothing, sure.
More than just shoes.
Yeah. We'll provide you a vest and a hard hat. So
socks and
working a lab at
the across the street. It'll probably take 30 to 45 minutes just to walk around and give that. So perfect. We'll plan that way. And then one thing, Mindy's on, and she had a cool experience this a couple weeks ago that I wanted her to share with you. So Mindy's our procurement officer. So we're doing this facility. She's the one that's purchasing all this stuff, or getting all that, writing RFPs, doing all of that, doing Davis Bacon, checking wages. But so she had a cool experience. I just wanted to share it with you. So Mindy, if you can hear us, go ahead.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Speak up a little bit.
Thank you.
But speak loudly.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing that. That's great.
Thanks, Mindy. That's all I got.
Okay, great. Under the board chair report, I have four things I need to go through tonight. First, the exciting stuff, the employee anniversaries. I like this. It speaks to the entire culture, good leadership, good management when you have people that stay with us for a long time. So as a dispatcher, Stacy Corbidge has been with us for 10 years. Facility maintenance, Clark Winward has been with us for 16 years. As an operations supervisor, Fred Bam has been with us for 19 years. Our drivers, Pete Storper, has been with us for 5 years. And Travis Mitchell has driven with us for 26 years. So that is so awesome. We love this culture where people want to stay with us for a long time, especially in a culture, in a society where people are not very loyal. So this just says everything. I love that.
Do we give anything to employees for certain milestones?
We do. We're in the process of always looking at, is that still recognizing folks in the way that they want to be recognized? And so we're in the process of re-looking at that and saying, actually taking feedback. And so we might be changing that. But what we've been currently doing is the pewter bust that we gave to the board members that recently, we're kicked off the board. we
wow. Thanks for bringing that up.
No, the board members, their term ended. We give them a pewter bus, and then we mark on there how many years they've served. And so we go back, and every 5 years, we'll put another indication of how long they've served. But again, we're looking to see if there's other things that we could do that would be of more value to people.
Okay.
Thank you.
Can I
ask? Please.
Can I ask? So every month that we have the meeting, I hear people that have been working, you know, for the transit district for a long time. Is it because of the compensation is very competitive, or the benefits, or I know that you have a good culture, but what else is there that makes the employees?
So every year we do an employee satisfaction survey that we do, and I would say a few things. One, I think the compensation, we try to base compensation on market, right? And we appreciate that the board has recognized that, and the board has been supportive of keeping us in the market with our employees, and I think that's a value. I think the benefits, we see that value depending on age valued differently. But there are definitely folks that find that of value. And I think to the point of culture, we ask questions like, do you feel like you know where to get information? Do you feel like your supervisor's approachable? These are more cultural questions, right? Do you feel like what CBTD does adds value to the community? And so historically, those are really high rated things. And so I do think overall for the people that are what we would call core, that have been here and are staying here, I think they find their job meaningful, the service they provide, the passengers they get to interact with.
Can you also talk about the driver scheduling app? I think there's a couple things you guys do that
sure.
are forward leaning, and I think we had a bragging.
Well, so some of that too is, and that's this great group of people, right, that we get to work with that, you know, when you're trying to run an organization, you can't be complacent, you have to constantly be changing. And so as society's changed, as our workforce has changed, we've had to change. And so what Patrick's talking about is, it used to be years ago that we did everything based on seniority. So however long you've been with the organization, you got to bid on shifts every 3 to 4 months, and you got to bid the shift you wanted. Well, what we found was that the same driver would bid the easy routes and easy shifts. And so your most new drivers were driving the routes that were the hardest, the most challenging. And so that led to issues of, you know, maybe not being safe because I'm trying to maintain a schedule, to schedules not being reliable. And so we did some things to navigate that. But what we've done now is it's not necessarily that seniority doesn't matter, but it's more based on availability. So every so often they put in through the phone app. And I should have Jody talk about this more than me because he knows better than I do. You want to talk to it?
Sure.
Okay, I'll probably screw it up.
Continually updating availability with people and then trying to schedule around what their preferences are. And that's a big thing for people, right? Because we're all trying to figure out this work-life balance thing. And that's a big thing for people. And we have Jillian and Angel that work with us that are very in tune with that. And we try to accommodate everything we can. And that doesn't always work out, but I think our environment is great that way.
But it's really based on their availability. So they have a lot of control over their schedule, which it's tough in an industry where we've got to have somebody in the seat. Like it's, and I would say it's not common. A lot of agencies I still see, it's based on this bid schedule, and it's just like, hey, this is what you're working. Tough. And if you're on the lower seniority list, that's just what it is. So credit to these guys.
They also allow drivers to swap on their own, too. So they can actually talk to each other and then make a swap.
Now, I will say in candidness, we don't always get it right. And I think that's another great thing about the culture is when we get it wrong, we're okay to admit we got it wrong. We've made some changes where the employees give us feedback and we're like, man, that's only been in place a month, but that feedback is so much of a concern. Let's go back and look at this again. And then we try to take that feedback in and address something, you know. And so I would say we hit it right a lot of times, but man, if we hit it wrong, we're okay admitting, hey, we got it wrong, let's go back and look at it again. And so I think that's helpful. But yeah, I mean, just we've got a talented group of people that really run this thing every day.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
We appreciate that. Good answer?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Three other things that I needed to cover. The first is a request to the steering committee. So let me preface this. We've had an appeal from an administrative decision regarding an individual who has some mental disabilities. There have been three disruptive behaviors. Two of them involved a knife and threatening another passenger. One involved giving tobacco to a minor. The individual's father reached out to me to appeal the administration's decision to not let that individual ride the bus forever.
12 months.
12 months for a one-year period. It was my inclination at the time just to tell this individual's father to go pound sand, and I let him know as much that I looked at this very dimly because of the seriousness of the issues. However, as a board member, I am one of a team, so I can't arbitrarily make a decision. And it kind of led to a roundabout conversation with Todd of, we do not have a very robust appeals process inside the board. So I've asked Todd to meet with legal and also bring that in front of the steering committee to discuss what's the appropriate process for an appeal. We've had a couple of these, and as we get bigger and bigger, we will have more of them where, you know, they don't like the decision, it comes before the board. There should be some level of sponsorship from a board member to bring it in front of the entire board for reconsideration. I'd also like the steering committee to consider the fact that when we reconsider the administration's decision, you know, there is gotta be some pretty serious circumstances that weren't considered for us to go around their decision. So in the spirit of all that, I've told this individual, we're probably not gonna make a decision for a while. It's beautiful weather out there. He can walk the 2 miles to his different locations he needs to get to. But there does need to be a better process for us. And then we could use this as a catalyst for exploring that process. Anything you would like to add to that?
No, I've reached out to legal, so we will be gathering research as have been instructed, and then we'll get a committee meeting together.
Okay. Great. And then one, maybe two things for the legislative committee. So Todd and I went back to DC. We do this every single year. I consider it a pretty significant investment in our relationship with the Utah delegation. We meet with every single of the offices at the Utah delegation. We have very productive meetings inside these. This year, again, I consider it an investment. We weren't going to ask for anything. We were giving a report on efforts that they had made in the past, including funding of the facility, where we're at in that. We've extended invitations for them all to come. Many of them are taking us up on that invitation. And so from a legislative committee standpoint, it's an election year, and we should look for opportunities to engage these elected officials because we have something to offer. I think next Wednesday, Representative Curtis, is he coming here? I think I'm arranging that actually.
Okay.
So he is, and then representatives from Mitt Romney's office are coming, talk about the update. Great time for us to invest in these individuals because they help us significantly to the tune of how much money?
$34 million.
That's a good investment in my mind. So very excited about some of the things that are coming up this summer, and hope at least the legislative committee can engage with that and look for other ways to continue that kind of investment. One of the other things we talked about is a demonstration project with Aspire. Do we know who Aspire is? They're part of the National Science Foundation located at Utah State University. They've come up with a rechargeable pad that's inserted in the roadway itself. And so the demonstration project would be to take one of our loops, put a electric bus on it, and demonstrate how an electric bus works on a persistent rechargeable network in the harshest of conditions that include tremendous topography. It's a great demonstration for a nationwide project and could be a really great lead-in for the Utah Olympics. So it is a huge investment to the tune of like $50 million if we go down that path. Not from us, but from the Federal Transportation Administration and other associated federal entities. So we're trying to win over federal sponsorship on that concept. There's no decisions made on it. We're just having conversations. I want to bring you in the loop on that concept. conversation. Last thing, yesterday we did
Transit Academy.
Yeah, Utah Transit Authority Academy. We went down to that in Salt Lake yesterday. Talked about UTA's long-range plans, got a sneak peek into how they build coalitions inside their stakeholders, especially the elected representatives. It was great to see so many of the elected officials there and their staff and their participants. So that was a good meeting. We ended at a tour of the light rail operating center and we drove trains. So really good day. It's always a good day when you drive a train.
Patrick parked the train. He got to drive it all the way around and park it. It's pretty good.
He was
good.
The best
driver. Smooth.
That's why. It's very easy to drive a train, it turns out. So that's all the reports I have. Any conversation among the board before we adjourn? No? Okay. And then any public comment? Without any, we stand adjourned. Thank you.